Welcome to Sensible Health Solutions, the show where we simplify health and wellness. Join your hosts, Haley Fields and Dr. Scott Looper, as they share practical tips and expert insight to help you navigate common ailments, nutrition, and overall well-being. Tune in for straightforward advice that empowers you to live a healthier life.
Hi, I'm Dr. Looper, and today I want to go over recent health news, because recently a research article came out that discovered that most people who are taking GLP-1 agonists like Ozempic or Wegovy or tirzepatide are not staying with it. They're quitting. Depends on what age you look at, but the older people in particular are quitting the medications for a variety of reasons. And it's interesting to me because when these medications first came out, I thought to myself, bad things are going to happen. This is going to create problems, because I've seen this over and over again with other medications that come out, and they do something, and so they're powerful. And I don't want to take anything away from these GLP-1 agonists. They really do work. They are the real deal. If you want to lose weight, you take them. The chances of you losing weight is better than any other medication that there ever has been, with fewer side effects. So they're excellent, except for they do have side effects, and they do have limitations. And it took a while for people to kind of figure out what those were, and they have now. And now most people don't like it, and they don't want to take it. So before I talk about the reasons why people are quitting, let me talk about what these medications do, why they're so popular, why they're so effective. And what they do is they lower your appetite. They make it to where you don't want to eat as much. And if you don't eat as much, it changes your chemistry. It changes your hormones. It changes how your body functions, and it makes it to where your weight comes down. It's not that dissimilar to doing a gastric bypass operation. That's the operation where you take your stomach and you pinch it off and take a large stomach and make it small, so that if you eat too much, you get stomach pain. And so there's a feedback system where you don't want to overeat, and so you don't. And so you lose weight. So the weight loss of doing a gastric bypass is astounding. It's extremely effective. But the problem with that is over time, people, you know, they like to eat, so they eat a little teeny bit more than they did before, and their stomach stretches, and they eat a teeny bit more, and they eat a teeny bit more, and then after a number of years, people have gained the weight back. Not always, not everybody, and not all the weight, but generally speaking, people will gain weight back when they do the operation. The GLP-1 does a similar thing, except for not with surgery, it does it with medications. And what it does is it slows down your digestion. And so food lingers in your digestive system longer than it normally would. And so you feel full, and your natural instinct is not to load more food on top of the food that you already have. And so you eat less. Now, that's not the only reason they work. There's some hidden mechanism that somehow decreases cravings, because it's been discovered that these medications can also be used for addiction. They're doing research on this right now, and so it's got a whole potential to really improve people's treatment for addiction. Certainly food is addicting, so it kind of fits in there. But there's this fundamental slowing of the digestive system that results in you eating less and losing weight. It doesn't last. It eventually wears off, and the weight loss is most marked in the first few months of taking the medications. And then what happens is your body gets used to it. I mean, this so often is the case. We mentioned that with the gastric bypass operation. Your body gets used to it. It adjusts, and typically within a year or so, could be as early as 9 months, or could be as late as maybe 15, 16 months, the body quits losing weight and you just level out. And then, in theory, you keep taking the medication so that you don't gain the weight back. But in fact, most people quit. They don't want to take it. And they, in fact, most people are quitting before they even get to that point for a variety of reasons. Let's go over the reasons why people are quitting. Reason number one, because it gives you an upset stomach. Now, when you slow the digestion of food down, there's a good chance that you're literally not going to digest your food, that it's going to make the entire circuit through your digestive system without getting all the way digested. Now, if you send partially digested food down into your lower intestine where the bacteria are, then they treat it as free food and they eat it. They ferment it. And in the process of fermenting it, they make bubbles, for one thing. And so the bubbles make you feel queasy and upset and burpy and heartburny, maybe nauseous, right? They also, the organisms take what they want from that food and use it, and then they poop out what they don't want because they don't want it. It's the, you know, the nasty bits of whatever the food is. So now you got this nasty crap. Is that the right word? I think it's what it is. You know, waste material that the bacteria generate in you, and your body has to deal with it. And so many people get upset. I mean, they get like upset stomach, but they also get emotionally upset. It turns out this toxic crap is irritating to our brain, to our body in general, but our brain is specific, and it makes us more moody and, you know, irritable and sad. And there's all these emotions that go along with this, and people don't like that. And so they know they don't want to do this, and so they quit taking the medication. The folks that are more susceptible to this are older people because their systems are weaker to begin with. Now, young people have a lot of excess capacity in their digestive system. If you weaken their digestive system, they can still digest because they got extra capacity. Whereas older people, don't have that capacity. Our ability to digest goes down as we age. Our ability to make digestive enzymes goes down as we age. Our ability to, you know, to do all the things that are involved in digestion go down as we age. And so the digestion is less robust. Even with people who aren't taking GLP-1 agonists, it still is a problem. Lots and lots of folks that used to be able to eat whatever when they were younger, when they get older, they can't do that anymore. I'm one of those people. When I was younger, the pizza I ate was usually in pizza sizes. I mean, I'd eat a pizza, the whole thing, or two, depending on how hungry I was. And then I got older, it was like 25, and I couldn't do that anymore. I started getting heartburn, and my life was over as I knew it. I mean, it started a whole new phase where, you know, it's tough getting old at 25, but I kid you not, that's when it started, when I was 25. And so me, like so many of people in general, so many of you all watching this thing, notice as you get older, your digestive system gets weaker. So the appeal of losing weight is very strong, and the medications work. They actually work. You lose weight. Not always, not 100% effective, but more effective than anything else that's ever been invented. So that counts for something. But if you take a weak digestive system and you further weaken it, chances are you're going to suffer. You're going to blow up. You're going to get toxic. You're going to get moody. You're going to feel poorly. You're going to get headaches maybe. You're going to get weak. You're just going to feel bad is what you're going to do. And so people quit because they don't want to feel bad. It's not worth it. So another side effect, it's an effect, but it's kind of a complication of the effect. Remember, it's weight loss is one of the things that happen on these medications, except for the weight loss isn't always exactly the kind you want, because really what we want is fat to lose, but not muscle. But that's not actually what happens. A goodly portion of the weight loss that people experience on these GLP-1 agonists is due to muscle. It's about 30-35% of the weight loss is muscle. Now, again, if you're young and you got a lot of extra muscle, you got plenty more to go on. But if you're older and your muscles are already declining and you lose what little muscle you have, it really makes a difference. They tell a story in the research of a fellow who is in his 70s, and he's had a lifelong passion for doing medieval battle recreations where he puts on armor and gets a sword and a shield and goes out and whacks on his friends. He had to quit. He took Ozempic or one of the similar ones and lost weight for sure and lost muscle for sure and couldn't play the game anymore. Now, admittedly, the armor he was wearing weighs around 90 pounds, and the sword is a big, heavy thing. So it took a lot of muscle for him to do this thing. But he was able to do it, you know, for years. He trained for it, and it was strengthened to that particular task to have fun and had to quit. He quit taking the Ozempic and did not get his muscle back. It didn't, like, it just grew back again. Once you lose it, it's really hard to get it back again. So that was a fail. I was definitely taking the medication, hoping to get something out of it, getting that thing and not really realizing at what cost it was going to be. So I want to take a moment and talk about how to lose weight, like for real, because there always has been and always will be some kind of gimmicky thing for losing weight. Things come and go, trust me, without a doubt, within the next year or two, something else is going to come along. It's going to be a weight loss thing. And everybody's going to be super excited about it, and then it's going to blow up somehow, and they're going to have complications that people didn't anticipate. It happens over and over and over again. So let me just say, here's how you really lose weight. The way to actually lose weight is you have to change your hormones. Hormones dominate weight gain or weight loss. There are people who cannot gain weight. They can eat as much as they possibly can all day long and they don't gain anything. Why? What is the deal? It's because of their hormones. Their hormones won't allow them to gain weight because in order to gain weight, that is to put on fat, you have to have hormones that dictate whether you're going to gain weight or not. Otherwise, it just doesn't go on. And so people think that weight loss has to do with calories in and calories out. And that's the basic math and there's no escaping it. And I want to assure you that is not the case. Now, calories do affect hormones, and that's how they make a difference whether we gain weight or not. It's the hormones that dictate whether you're going to gain weight or not, not the calories. There are people who have their hormones broken, and they can eat very small, you know, calorie diets, you know, 1,000, 1,200 calories a day, 800 calories a day, even down to 500 calories a day, and gain weight because the hormones are broken, they're stuck on. And then they gain weight anyways. There's a story of a fellow who was grossly overweight and his doctor didn't believe he was actually following his diet. So checked him into the hospital and had the hospital feed him a 500 calorie diet a day, 500 calorie a day diet. And he gained weight to everyone's amazement. So his hormones were broken. It wasn't the calories, it wasn't his diet, it was the hormones. Now that was an extreme case. And so those people are different. I mean, you can't, you know, plan the world based on the extreme cases. For most people, if you change how you eat, then you get to change your hormones. If you change how you, you know, move and how you exercise and how you miss a meal or not miss a meal, it affects your hormones. So the way to lose weight for real is to, I mean, go slow on this thing. Number one, you got to pay attention to what your weight is. It's much, much easier to gain weight if you don't pay attention to your weight and you don't weigh yourself because it's subtle and you can't feel it. It's much easier to lose weight if you pay attention because it's you're motivated to make whatever changes in your diet, in your lifestyle by looking at the weight. If you look at the weight and you do so with the point of view of a scientist where you're just collecting information, it reveals what's hidden because otherwise you really don't know. You have some vague sense of it, but a vague sense won't actually help you. So one of the fundamental rules that I have for people who want to lose weight is you need to weigh yourself every day and graph it. Now the graphing part is because you get to see it. And when you see it, it's there in black and white. And it means something. When you put it down on the page, then it's real and it holds more weight and it influences what you do to a greater extent. Now it's not a magic bullet where everybody writes down what their weight is, what the weight is, loses weight. It doesn't work like that. But the chances go up for you to lose weight if you weigh yourself, record it, and graph it. So the other thing is the key element with getting your hormones squared away as carbohydrates. Now, y'all know this already. You eat lots of carbs, you gain weight, and you don't eat carbs and you lose weight. I mean, that's a zillion diets is what it is. It's not a matter of just avoiding carbs because you can avoid carbs and lose weight, and it's not particularly hard to do. Almost everybody will lose weight when you avoid carbs. The problem is what happens when you eat carbs again? Well, I'll tell you what happens. You gain the weight back and some. Carbs are delicious. Carbs are fabulous. Carbs make me feel good. Carbs are great. Now, I like carbs. Except for I eat too many carbs, I gain weight. So somehow I got to manage the carb thing. Now, for some people, you just have to pull them off carbs and just leave them off carbs. There's no getting around that. But though that's a minority of people. A majority of people can do well with some carbs. Not a lot, a little. And if the carbs are slow, if they're mixed with protein, which, you know, lowers the conversion of carbs into sugar, or fiber, same story, it slows the conversion of the carbs into sugar, then you do better and you can tolerate the carbs. So there's, the carbs are a key thing, but it's not just simply a matter of avoiding them or not avoiding them, it's a matter of pacing yourself and eating carbs in slower forms that raise your blood sugars up less. Now, let me explain about the blood sugar thing. So when you eat food, your body breaks it down and nutrients get absorbed and put in your bloodstream. With carbohydrates, the starches get broken down because they're long strands of sugar and they get all cut up into small little bits of sugar. The sugar gets absorbed, gets in your bloodstream, and your body has to make a decision. Either it needs to burn those calories, the sugars, or it needs to store them. Now, if it's going to burn them, then it's going to release a hormone called insulin-like growth factor. And if it's going to store them, it's going to release a hormone called insulin. They both lower your blood sugar. So the insulin-like growth factors, like insulin, that's why it has that name. And insulin is the famous hormone. But they're both useful. Now, what I'm saying is an oversimplification of the system. There's a lot of subtlety to it. And if I go through all the complexity of it, there's no way we can do this video in a half an hour. So I got to simplify this thing. So bear with me. Everything I'm telling you is true. It's just there's some complexity to it. But the basic truth is this. When you eat something and it gets converted into sugar and the sugar gets into your bloodstream, your body has to decide, we're going to burn it or are we going to store it? Now, how it decides that is whether the shallow stores of sugar are empty, not empty, but lower, or full. Now, if the shallow stores, that's the kind of sugar we use, you know, from minute to minute, day to day, right? If those stores are low, well, clearly we take that sugar and we pack it into the hopper to fill the stores back up. Now, if they're full, we're good. We don't need any sugar. We're good. We got it right here. We should take all the sugar and pack it into fat and store it for a rainy day. So with that in mind, you know, I'm thinking I would rather burn the calories rather than store them. And so then the question is, well, how can I deplete my shallow stores of sugar? And if you think for a minute, you think, well, exercise. Yeah, except for here's the problem. We are all of us freakishly efficient. And so in order to significantly lower your shallow stores of sugar by exercising, you have to exercise a lot for a long time. Now, just there's a little piece I missed here, which is the shallow stores of sugar are mostly in the form of glycogen. And glycogen is easily converted into glucose, and it's stored in your liver, and it's stored in your muscles. And so if your glycogen is ready, like, to burn right now, and so as opposed to fat have to go, you have to go through a bunch of changes to be able to convert it into calories. It takes a while, but the glycogen you can do right away. So if you want to deplete your glycogen levels and you're going to do exercise, then what you need to do is you need to run about a 90 minutes. And that's about as fast as you can. Like aerobic maximum, cranking hard, going down the trail, going down the road or the track hard for a long time to really get the depletion enough to really trigger this shift in your hormones. Now, that's crazy. Most people are not going to do that. Few people can run that long. It's just really hard on your body. Most people just literally can't do it. So what about riding a bike? It's easier. It's gentler on your joints. So how about riding a bike? Yeah, that'll work. Except for you have to ride a bike like a racer. You have to go up big hills and go as fast as you can and just crank really hard for about 3 hours. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's not going to happen either. What about just hiking? Yeah, hiking will work. You got to hike vigorously up and down hill and dale for about 5 hours. Okay, now that's a lot of hiking. What about if I just do regular life and just, you know, walk around and do stuff just like normal people? Yeah, that's about 18 hours. And they're all the same. They'll all accomplish the goal the same way. And the 18-hour one, yeah, there's a name for that. That's called intermittent fasting. What you do is you miss a meal and you run your blood sugars out and you upregulate the insulin-like growth factor, and that's why intermittent fasting works. It's because it changes your chemistry. It changes your hormones. It changes how your body processes sugar. It's not like you set it once and it's set forever. Once you jiggle the system and get the insulin-like growth factor up and running, it tends to continue to run that way. And then so every so often, you need to give it another jiggle and kind of upregulate that particular system. And so to miss a meal, it works better if you do it, you know, a couple times a week. Now, if you break your fast, your 18-hour mini fast, with carbohydrates, it ruins it. And it doesn't work, mostly. It maybe work a little bit, depending on who you are, but generally speaking, it just takes it away. It just doesn't work. You don't lose any weight. You don't change your chemistry. So let me be more specific. You do this thing where you miss a meal. Let's say you miss dinner, and you go to bed hungry-ish, and you wake up hungry because you haven't eaten since last lunch, and you have a plate of pancakes. Forget it. It's just the whole system is ruined. It doesn't work. If you're going to get it to work, you got to avoid carbs that first meal. So you can have eggs, and you can have, you know, I don't know, yogurt or a piece of cheese or some kind of protein thing, and some kind of vegetable thing, something with fiber in it. But you start doing sugar, significant amounts of sugar. Let's say you get a drink a glass of
orange juice. Oh, that's healthy. It's from oranges. Mm-mm. It's sugary, and it throws you off. It puts too much sugar in your system and screws up the hormone shift that you're looking for. Now, if you'd miss not just a meal, but let's say a whole day of food, then that's a stronger stimulus to the insulin-like growth factor system. And so it's upregulated for longer. So you can miss one day of eating and have the system shift for maybe a week, maybe 10 days. Now, you miss 2 days of eating, it might last 3 weeks. So the longer you go without eating, the deeper the stress is on the insulin-like, or rather the short-term sugar system, the more insulin-like growth factors upregulated, the more that becomes your go-to system. And so you just gotta kind of pick your poison of what pattern do you feel more comfortable with. Some people have an easy time not eating for a day, and so they can do that and they do fine. Other people suffer intensely if they miss any meal. And so for those people, maybe, you know, if they're young and fit, they could just do exercise their way into it. That's a thing. You could just exercise a lot occasionally. And if you're not, then you can miss a meal, and then you kind of pick which meal you're going to miss. Now, most people will pick breakfast because it's easy to miss breakfast because your blood sugars come up anyways, because you wake up and the cortisol levels naturally bring your blood sugars up. It's called the dawn effect. And so that's an easy one to miss. But come lunchtime, they're starving and they'll eat some kind of carb thing. So the trick is not eating carbs. Now, talk about tricks. The thing is about doing any of this stuff is if you are going to wait until you're in the right mood to do it, you'll do it occasionally, but mostly you won't do it. The better way to do it is to set up a system. Now, will you always follow the system? Not necessarily, but mostly. If you're serious about losing weight and getting healthy, the chances of you doing that go up if you set up a system. It's in the same kind of strategy as weighing yourself and writing it down. It increases the chances you're going to follow the program. Now, we all of us have willpower. And nearly all of us expect more out of our willpower than we're able to do. It's hard to be perfect. It's hard to have your willpower be the thing that's there all the time. Now, there are these strange, weird people that I hear about that are able to do things just by setting their will, but I don't hardly know anybody like that. I'm certainly not that way myself. Now, I have excellent will for minutes at a time, and then I don't. My willpower is limited. There's something about the way my brain works. I don't have an unlimited amount of willpower. It just quits. It's like I don't have an unlimited ability to pick up heavy weights. I can pick them up, and I can hold them for a while, and eventually I get tired, and I drop them. Same with my will. I can hold up for a while, and then I drop it, and I don't want to do that anymore. And I come up with a reason. There's no end of reasons. I come up with a reasonable, rational reason. At least at the time, it seemed rational. Later, I think, what was I thinking? But at the time, it seemed reasonable. So for me to have to use my willpower as a strategy, it sucks. It doesn't work. If it worked, I'd say this is what we should do, but it doesn't work. What's better, what actually works, is setting up a system of living. We've talked about this before in the show, where you get up in the morning and you eat breakfast, and you eat the stuff you have for breakfast because that's what you have. You bought it, and that's all you have in the house is the healthy things that you bought. The time to use your willpower is how you push the cart through the store. You don't let the bad food get in your cart. And so in order to do that, you can't go shopping hungry. It's already hard enough to not put bad food in the cart, but you have to not be hungry. And then it's way easier. And so you select healthy food and that's all you bring in your house. Now there's tricky situations where you have all these kids and you have a husband and they don't want to do the program and there's the bad food in the house. So then you have to keep that in mind and then change the system and come up with another system to deal with it. I have a 10-year-old who loves candy and he went trick-or-treating and got a big giant bag of candy. And that big giant bag of candy got thrown into the silver bowl that sits on the top of the refrigerator. And that bowl is basically nothing to me. I don't think of it as anything ever to eat. I don't look in it for anything because I can't eat anything in that bowl anyways. It just goes off the radar. Now, is that willpower? Kinda. It's kind of like a delusion where I just take it off the radar and don't think about it. So some of it's maybe a teeny bit of willpower. Most of it's just a force of habit. And so like that, you set up these systems in your life. And honestly, the best person to do that is you, because you know yourself the best. You just have to tell the truth and do the best you can to set the system up. You run it for a while, and then from time to time, you check. And is it working? That's where we're back to the weighing yourself and graphing it. Because if your weight goes up and down a few pounds every day, up and down, up and down. But over a period of a week, if you got a trend going, then you could see it. because we have an amazing ability to be able to see patterns as a species. And after a week, especially after 2 weeks, you can see exactly what the pattern is. Typically after about 5 days, you can see whether you're losing weight or gaining weight. Now, the best way to do this, the way it works the best, the way you can keep the weight off and just live that way, is you make small changes in your life, not huge ones. Sometimes they're big, but they're not the kind of that blow you up. They're the kind that you can do. And you settle into them, and they just become normal. So let me say it another way. I don't put any patients on diets, but I teach people how to eat. Because if I put them on a diet, then you're on a diet, and you lose weight, and they work. Diets work great. And then you quit your diet, and you gain all your weight back. You know, not always, Dr. Luber. No, you're right. Not always. Only 98% of the time. Yeah, 2% of the time, it'll last. That the percentages are too low. It's not worth doing. If anything fails 98% of the time, I'm not doing it. And there it is. I'm not doing it. So what really does work is you set up a pattern, and you live that pattern. And then eventually, you settle into the weight that you really are. You lose weight gradually, a pound or two a week, and then eventually you plateau out. Now, for most diets, the plateau is the enemy, but not in real life, it isn't. The plateau is the goal, is what you want to see. You want to see what the plateau is, because that's your real weight. And then if your plateau is great and everything's hunky-dory, then good, we got to figure it out. If it's too high, I'm sorry, we have to adjust the pattern again. You have to change it. And then, honestly, this is the thing you'll do the rest of your life. You'll look at how you live, and then you'll make adjustments in it, and then see how the adjustments come out. Because you're not a still target. You're a moving target. Because all of us age. All of us change. All of us have, you know, stress or not stress that affect us. And so we have to kind of bob and weave in terms of setting up a lifestyle that works for us. Now, is it worth doing? You bet it is. Because this is the road to happiness. This is a road to confidence. This is a road to be able to go through life and feel like, I can do this. I can handle it. And when we were kids, we just did whatever, and just it kind of worked. Or not, but mostly it just worked. And it was easy. Now it's not anymore. Now we have to think about things. Thank goodness we got a brain, and we can think about it. So it's helpful if you got a coach, somebody who's done this before, somebody to give you pointers and advice, because I can't say everything that there's to say in half an hour. But if you can get some kind of outside eyes and give you some ideas about how to do this, you're a leg up. So that's what you should do. You should get a coach. And the thing that a coach is going to do is going to teach you how to be a better coach for yourself than the coach. Because no one's going to be able to adjust your pattern better than you. If you just do what other people say, it's like, man. But if you can figure it out and you own it and it is your thing, it's got power. And you think, I can handle this. I can do this thing. Now, we could take this weight loss conversation and we could change it into, you know, dealing with pain or dealing with despair. And it's the same kind of thing. What you want to do is you want to change the pattern. Now, sometimes you're going to come in with something that's a crutch that's going to help bust you out of the pattern. Some kind of medication, maybe. Some kind of, you know, thing that you do. You go to the, you know, the spa or the sanatorium or I don't know what. Or you take Ozempic or some other kind of GLP-1 agonist. And you use that as a way to change your life and set up a new pattern. But you don't have the idea that this is going to fix me. I'm going to take this. I'm going to lose weight. Because if you have that idea, you're going to be disappointed. Yeah, chances are you're going to lose weight. And then you're not going to lose weight. And then you're going to gain the weight back. Or you're going to suffer the side effects of whatever the medication is. And for most people, it's too much. In reality, most people won't do it. The percentages run between 60 and 65% of people who start these medications quit. Because the side effects are too high. Because there's something in the way that this doesn't work for them, whatever it is, the cost even, right? So if you're going to work better for you, if you're going to do these medications, and you know, they're like anything else, they got a plus and a minus to them. And if you might be one of those people that it works really well on, and you get a lot out of it, and you lose, you know, 30, 40 pounds maybe, you know, maybe more even. And now you got to figure out how to live for the rest of your life like you did when you were on the medications, and you use that as a stepping stool, as a boost, to get the pattern going. That's about the best way to do it, is right there. Unfortunately, very few people do it that way. Some do. It turns out the percentage just comes around 15%. 15% of people use the changes that they get fostered on them by the effects of the medication, and then they settle into it. They start living that way. It becomes their new lifestyle, and then they can pitch the medication, and they don't gain the weight back. That's a thing. It can happen. Doesn't happen mostly, but it's an option. It's a way to do this. So that's what I recommend. So I'm going to cut it off there. I got a lot more health things to go over, but we're out of time. Anyways, I hope you enjoyed it, and I hope you keep tuning in to our channel.
Thanks for tuning in to another episode of Sensible Health Solutions. We hope you found today's discussion enlightening and packed with practical tips to enhance your wellness journey. Remember, small changes can lead to big results. If you enjoyed the episode, don't forget to subscribe and leave us a review on your favorite podcast platform. Your feedback helps us bring you the best content possible. Stay connected with us on social media for more health insights and updates. You can find us at Sensible Health Solutions across all social platforms. Until next time, stay sensible and stay healthy. This content is for informational purposes only and is not a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Seek medical advice from a healthcare professional for any medical conditions.